are cleared for departure. Have a good flight.
The Christopher Gabriel program begins now.
Leader in Fresno, the Central Valley, and for people who like to mix baseball and golf, and 41 degrees at 7:05 in the morning. 940 ESPN, 940 ESPN, Fresno.com. Your two-hour Friday morning tour begins right now, 4 minutes, 18 seconds past the hour of 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I am the host of this program and none other that I am aware of, Christopher Gabriel. Delighted to be with you. Back at Mission Control, Russ, Giants fan, Sharks fan. He's a fan of every team in North America, keeping us going in the right direction. We are live from Eagle Springs Golf and Country Club. We are here this morning for the 39th annual Dugout Club Golf Classic. That is all having to do with Fresno State baseball. This goes in hand every year. Pardon me, with the alumni game. We're doing a little bit of a flush the format Friday. This first hour we'll do kind of what we normally do. Bottom of the hour we'll have our weekly encore. That'll be Eli Betker this week, a terrific writer for Mountain West Wire. He is the lead college basketball writer for the Mountain West, for the Wire. Their stuff finds its way out to USA Today Sports and what have you. And then at 8:05 or thereabouts, I will be joined by Mr. Paul Loeffler, the voice of Fresno State football, basketball, baseball, debate, you name it. He's got it all covered. It could be water polo. We will jump into that as well. We'll talk about Fresno State baseball. Last year, of course, that 2018 season, they went 30-24, 13-17 in the conference. They just missed out getting into the Mountain West tourney, which was played by Nevada, San Diego State, San Jose State, and UNLV. But more on that in just a little bit. Is it me just driving out here? Where we're at out here? We are out here way out on Friday. It's just beautiful. It's a beautiful area. It's crisp. It's a gorgeous morning. It's about 41 degrees. My kind of day. Sun's starting to peer up over the hills. Clouds in the distance. I am here joined by our very capable team of Vivian and Patrick. Patrick, you'll recall, intern Patrick also played a little defensive line for Fresno State, had a great season. Vivian, of course, promotions director and on-site producer for the CGP, whenever we are out on the road, as we were up in Santa Clara and San Jose for the national championship. But driving out here this morning in you know, it's pitch black, and do people just not think about turning their brights off anymore when they're coming at you? They're driving on the other side of the road, and they've got their brights on, and especially the cars now that have got these, I don't know, what are they? Are they halogen? Are they LED, whatever? And do they just feel like, you know what, I got the car, and I need to see the road in front of me, and I see that there's drivers coming at me, and my lights are, I can see their eyeballs. I can see the color of their eyes. My headlights are so good. And yet they don't feel the need to turn their bright lights off. Do you know what I'm talking about? I know you know what I'm talking about. I passed at least 30 people who did that this morning. All of you. I hope you're listening to me. You know who you are. Jeez. My goodness. Well, the Kevin Durant situation. Did you see the press conference? Did you hear the press conference? Russ, I think we have that audio back there. We'll get to that in just a minute. Kevin Durant, after his game the other night, had a lot to say. You know, he had shut out the media for about 9 days, and then he decided to basically light up everybody. And he went after one Bay Area writer with The Athletic in particular. And, Russ, do we have that audio? Okay, so what we'll do is, instead of me replaying everything that Kevin Durant said, Kevin Durant went into the post-game news conference, and this is a couple minutes worth, but I want you to hear this, because Kevin makes some good points, but there's a couple of things here that he's wrong on. Russ, let's get this up.
So we've noticed that you hadn't talked for a while. Is it anything to do with anything on your mind, or has it just been coincidence that you haven't talked for some time?
Why do you care?
Because you usually talk.
Well, and I didn't feel like talking the last couple of days.
It was anything in particular?
No, I just didn't feel like.
Has anything to do with conversation about free agency?
Yeah, that's the conversation you're going to have. I don't think about that type of stuff. That's your job.
You've obviously been around the noise for so long. Is it bothering you more this year? Is it louder this year?
It's unnecessary. You got to do Ethan Strauss, who come in here and just give his whole opinion on stuff and make it seem like it's coming from me. And he just walk around here, don't talk to nobody, just walk in here and survey and then write something like that. And now y'all piling on me because I don't want to talk to y'all about that. I have nothing to do with the Knicks. I don't know who traded Porzingis. They got nothing to do with me. I'm trying to play basketball. Y'all come here every day, ask me about free agency, ask my teammates, my coaches. You rile up the fans about it. Let us play basketball. That's all I'm saying. And now when I don't want to talk to y'all, it's a problem with me. Come on, man. Grow up. Grow up. Yeah, you, grow up. Come on, bro. I come in and go to work every day. I don't cause no problems. I play the right way. Well, I try to play the right way. I try to be the best player I can be every possession. What's the problem? What am I doing to y'all? So, who are you? Why do I got to talk to you? Tell me. Is that going to help me do my job better? Nah, bro. I didn't feel like talking.
Kevin, the free agency thing really hadn't been that much of a discussion coming to you, because we got it loud and clear, at least most of us should have, that it was off limits. Don't go there.
What's the problem now?
No, just that you've been quiet and you're not usually quiet. You usually share your opinions and stuff. So everybody's like trying to figure out what's going on, and we're all getting questions from fans like, what's wrong with Kevin? I just tell him he's playing okay, but he's not talking right now.
I just don't trust none of y'all. Every time I say something, it gets twisted up and thrown out in so many different publications, try to tear me down with my words that I say. So when I don't say nothing, it's a problem. I just want to play ball. I want to go to the gym and go home. That's all. Is that a problem? All right, then.
Yeah, I mean, how are you playing? How's the team playing in the last couple weeks?
I'm done. You know you don't care about that.
I just asked you.
Have a good night.
All right, so there's a lot to unpack there, and let's just start with this. And what I think of Kevin Durant is immaterial, but what I think of Kevin Durant is I love watching him play. You have heard me on this program since I've been on 940 ESPN, always defending Kevin Durant. I've never been a fan of anybody getting on his case, the fact that he left Oklahoma City to come to Golden State. If you have a chance to go and make that much more money, live in a world-class city, you have a right to do that. And all the people who have said he ruined the NBA, it's ridiculous. It's crazy. All right, so I'm a Kevin Durant fan. But having said that, some of the things that he said there, I get it. He wants to come to the gym, do his job, and go home. We'll get back to that part of it. I get why he's frustrated. You know, people, writers, broadcasters, talk show hosts, everybody is talking about every move that he makes. But he's not special that way. He is one of the three or four best players in the world, so we're going to be mindful of everything that he does. And he came out himself and said, I'm going to be fully transparent with all this. Here's a guy who's signing, you know, a couple of one-year contracts. So he's brought some of this on himself. But yeah, it's got to be frustrating. It's got to be annoying for him that when he comes to Oracle or wherever they're out on the road, that he's got people asking him endlessly about what do you want to do next year? Are you going to go to the Knicks? When Porzingis was traded from the Knicks, you know, what are you going to be doing? Are you looking at the Knicks? Are you looking at somebody else? Where do you want to go to Boston? Do you want to go to the Lakers? And that does get tiresome. And I get it that with media members, a lot of times when you're in one of those press conferences and you hear, if you're an athlete sitting up there, or if you're watching at home, if you're watching on ESPN or whatever network you're watching, or if you're listening on the radio to a press conference, and you'll hear three or four or five of us ask the same question over and over and over again, yeah, that gets frustrating. And when you're answering those questions over and over, it's got to be annoying. There's no question about it. But the other side of this is that for Kevin Durant, for the amount of money that he's making to be one of the few privileged people, because of his greatness as a basketball player, that he gets to do what he does, on balance, when you're looking at 5 or 8 or 10 minutes for 82 games and then the playoffs, sometimes he's going to be in there, sometimes he's not going to be in there. If he doesn't have a great game, or if Clay or Steph, or maybe Andre Iguodala or Draymond Green or whomever, along with, you know, Steve Kerr is always going to be in there talking, KD may not be in there every single night. But on balance, when KD or any of them have to go in there or are asked to go into the media room to answer questions for 5 to 10 minutes, it's just not asking a lot. And as an athlete, you know that's part of the game. As a media member, I know what my job is. And I know I always try to ask smart questions and have one follow-up. Have I asked dumb questions? Heck yes. There's no two ways about it. Have I been, drilled, verbally drilled by a coach or a player before? Of course I have. But that's just, I've never taken it personally. It's part of the arena that we're in. We ask questions, they answer questions, and then they go back. They go back to the locker room, they change, and they're done. That's how the whole thing works. Kevin Durant wants part of this to be in a bubble. Kevin Durant, when he says, when he said in that sound you heard, I don't think about that stuff, talking about free agency, that's just being disingenuous. That's not true. Of course he does. And he has brought some of this on himself. But when he says, I want to just come to the gym, play ball, and go home, that's great. We get that too, KD. But you're not, my man, you're not in high school anymore. You're not going to the Clovis West gym at 9 o'clock on a Sunday. And Jimmy, the gym attendant or the janitor or whomever, got the key and opens it up. You bring you know, a couple of balls out there. You're shooting around a little bit for a couple hours. And then you put them back in the rack and you say, hey, Jimmy, thanks, man. Talk to you later. Or, hey, Mr. Smith, thanks a bunch. I'm going to go home now. Yeah, you go to the gym, play a little ball, and go home when you're in high school or when you're in college. But when you're getting paid millions and you are on the global stage and your name happens to be Kevin Durant, you need to change the frequency a little bit. And again, I'll make this point again. I completely understand that he gets frustrated by getting asked the same questions. But you know what? Welcome to the world of being a professional athlete. That's just kind of part of the game, isn't it? You're going to get asked the same questions. When I was at Media Day for the national championship, and I spent the balance of my time, the majority of my time, in the Alabama Hour by Coach Saban. In the Clemson Hour, I spent the majority of my time by Coach Sweeney. And there were hundreds of media members from all over the country. And as you stood there and you listened, what you heard were the same questions coming up over and over. The reason is because different reporters, different broadcasters, different sports anchors were coming up, and they're not paying attention. to what everybody else is asking, and they're not interested because they have their own job to do. They have their own listeners or viewers that they have to do their job for, so they're going to ask the question that maybe has been asked over and over and over. Now, it's a little bit different in a press conference after the game because you're all in the same place in the same given time for 8 or 10 or 12 or 15 minutes, so you're able to hear what everybody is asking. Nevertheless, when you have your little iPhone or your Android or your digital recording equipment, you're going to ask a question because you want to hear your voice on tape, and you're going to ask it in a different way that somebody else asked it. And athletes up there know that. They know that. Kevin Durant is a tremendous basketball player, but for as much as he's frustrated about all of the free agency stuff, he has brought some of this onto himself. And I think what happens sometimes is you'll hear an athlete say something. This is one of the things that gets me crazy. You'll hear an athlete say, well, you're twisting my words around. And you know what? Sometimes writers do that. They will interpret something a certain way, and maybe they get it wrong. Or if I'm listening to somebody at a post-game press conference, I might hear something that an athlete says, and I might interpret that wrong. We make mistakes, and it's important that we own up to those mistakes. At least I think so. I think that improves credibility, or it takes away our credibility when we act like we live in a bubble and we don't make mistakes, because you know what? We do. But what gets me crazy, and I've always felt this way, I don't care if we're talking about sports or we're talking about politics, but right now we're talking about sports, is when an athlete says something, it's on tape, we have him or her on video, and then they say, I was misquoted. And you look at them and you say, no, you actually weren't. I've got what you said. In fact, I've got what you said here. I'm going to let you hear it. And I've actually had athletes in front of me say, well, that's not what I said. It's like, no, you did say that. So when Kevin Durant says that people are twisting his words around, I don't know that they're twisting his words around. I do think that there's been a lot of interpretation or misinterpretation about what it is that he is planning on doing or what he wants to do in the off season. I mean, he's got to know. He's got to know, being that he is such an integral part of the Golden State Warriors, that people want to know what he's doing. Because the media, when we are there, in the media room of Oracle Arena, I've not been there, not this season, but when we're there, we're not only interested in what they have to say, but we have readers, we have listeners, we have viewers that want to know what's going on. They want to know what's going on with their favorite athletes. And so we are we're the conduit to that. And again, just to roll back to where I started this, I completely understand when an athlete doesn't like that the media is reporting on the same thing every day. But for him to give this idea that the only narrative associated with Kevin Durant from print media members or broadcast media members has been free agency, that's just patently false. That's simply not correct. Has that been an issue? Has it been something that's been written and talked about? Of course it has. But for Kevin to suggest that's the only thing, that's selective listening on his part. So, he's, when June rolls around and after the Warriors either have won another championship or they've been defeated, the next sound you hear is going to be, where's KD going? It's not going to just be him. It's going to be about Klay Thompson. Is he going to stay in Golden State, which I think he will? What's going to happen with Kyrie? What's going to happen with Kawhi? Certainly, what's going to happen with Anthony Davis? He's not alone. We're going to be talking about all of them. So KD's going to be in a nice exclusive club. It won't just be about him. But overall, small price to pay to answer questions for 5 to 10 minutes about what your career plans are going to be after the season is over. It's just part of the game. Glad you're hanging out with us. We are live from Eagle Springs Golf and Country Club. We are here for Fresno State Baseball. We're here for the 39th annual Dugout Club Golf Classic in hour number two. Paul Leffler will join me, and we're going to be talking a lot of Fresno State Baseball. Good morning to you. This is the CGP.
More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
And good morning to you again from Eagle Springs Golf and Country Club. Way out on North Bryant. Beautiful morning out here. Low 40s. Nice chill in the air. You know, being that I'm at a golf and country club, I feel like I need to channel Jim Nance. Hello, friends. It just seems like it's the right thing to do. Josh tweeting me. You can always tweet me at CG Program. Josh writing in this morning, Durant is a petulant child. It is his job to talk to the media. If he can't handle the soft media in the Bay Area, he'll never be able to handle a tough market. All he needs to say is that I'm trying to win a championship. We'll talk about it in June. Josh, I think that's very well said. I think that's very well said. And I think his point, you know, the Bay Area media is, I think, on balance. I know a lot of the guys up there, and I wouldn't call them soft. But I think what you're saying is relative to, say, New York or Boston or Philly, can we agree there? They're not as hard or rough-edged as East Coast media. But Josh's point's well taken. If Kevin Durant, if he thinks that he's having difficulty with the media in the Bay Area and he decides that he ends up with the New York Knicks, well, let me tell you, the amount of publications and media outlets there overall in terms of print and broadcast, it's triple or quadruple. I mean, San Francisco, the Bay Area is market number four. New York is number one. But the, oh, my goodness. I mean, they live to savage you in New York. I'm trying to imagine Kevin Durant in that market. We had the All-Star Draft. Team LeBron, Team Giannis. That was fun to watch. I kind of wish that we would have been able to see each player's reaction when they got picked. But the Team LeBron starters, LeBron James, he chose Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Kawhi Leonard, James Harden. Boy, that couple of guys can shoot on that team, huh? Team Giannis, that starting lineup is Giannis Antetokounmpo, along with Steph Curry, Joel Embiid, Paul George, Kemba Walker. That's some good stuff there. Anthony Davis is a reserve on Team LeBron. And there was Charles Barkley had some funny stuff talking about, you know, maybe Giannis needs to trade his entire team for Anthony Davis. Good stuff all the way around. It wasn't nearly as dramatic as I thought it was going to be, just because I thought that we were going to see some of the players' reactions. They were going to have cameras set up wherever they happened to be, but didn't work out that way. Still, it was fun. It was better to see it broadcast live this year than last year, the whole secret draft. All right, coming up, it is our encore of the week, Eli Betker from the Mountain West Wire. He is a lead college basketball writer for the Mountain West. That is up next. This is the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
The guests that I love to bring on this program are the ones that have the coolest names. And sometimes you get a guest with a cool first name and last name. That would be Eli Betker. He is the lead men's college basketball writer at Mountain West Wire. And I think that they send a lot of their stuff. A lot of their stuff is published by USA Today. Regardless, I read Eli all the time. He and his colleagues do a great job, and I am delighted to finally get him on this program. Eli, good evening to you, my friend.
Christopher, thank you for that very kind intro. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, it's funny because you and I follow each other on Twitter. We have for a while, and a lot of our listeners here who are Fresno State fans said you really have to get Eli on the program. And it's funny because I've wanted you on for a while, but I couldn't figure where it fits. This is a perfect opportunity right now, so it's good to have you aboard. So, Eli, Fresno State's dramatic win up in Logan, I mean, that was one of the high points in what has been a great season so far. Well, until the comeback here in Fresno against San Diego State after being down 31-11. But at the other end, you have the Colorado State game That's a game that Fresno State has to win. As you look at this Bulldogs team, Eli, there's a number of different ways to look at them. Are they the team, in your view, that's more the team that we saw in the second half against the Aztecs? Are they the team that we saw go wire to wire, dominating Northwestern? Or are they somewhere maybe a little closer to the team we saw against Colorado State that at any given night can just not look so good start to finish and lose a game that they could win, should win?
You know, Fresno State is one of those teams to me that I think is definitely one of the better teams in this conference. I know a lot of people have them second or third in terms of power rankings. And as you mentioned, they have had their moments where they look like a pretty dominant team. They just pummeled Northwestern earlier this year. That was a really good victory for these guys. They played pretty strong against Nevada on the road, at home. And I think Fresno State has a lot of things to be looking positive about. But, again, they've had their ups and downs. Losing at home to Utah Valley is certainly a low point in the season. But they do have enough talent on this roster to really make things interesting down the stretch. And I think we'll see that again tonight against Utah State. They have the chance to be the sole second possession of this conference. So I think the Bulldogs have a lot to be looking forward to. But, again, up and down.
Eli, I realize this is a bit of a moot point right now, but it is a little disappointing that a game like this tonight here at Save Mart Center between Utah State and Fresno State, a couple of teams having great seasons, as you're saying, you know, tied for second. This is going to go a long way. If Fresno State wins, they all but secure the tiebreaker. That it's not on one of ESPN's platforms. This is a game that's worthy of the country seeing a couple of outstanding basketball teams, which leads me to this. Where is the Mountain West in terms of the national radar? Where is the conference at right now, and where do you think the conference should be?
You know, I think Mountain West has taken a bit of a step back this season, and that's certainly surprising to some people that are not in the Mountain West market or might not even be on the West Coast, because we see all the headlines about Nevada and how well they've been playing and the national publicity that the Wolfpack have been receiving. But beyond Nevada, it's been really tough for this conference. A lot of the metrics indicate that the Mountain West is as weak as it's ever been. And I think that's why we have these quality matchups that we like to see, as you mentioned, Utah State, Fresno State tonight. That's why we don't see these types of matchups on national TV. However, San Diego State and New Mexico do play this evening, and that's on ESPN2. But again, those teams are a bit disappointing this season. They're supposed to be number two and number three in the preseason media poll, and they're not really looking all the part of the postseason team at this point. So the health of this conference definitely needs to improve. They're not where they need to be in terms of getting multiple bids to the NCAA tournament. That's something that will be discussed quite a bit over the next couple of months. But we like to see these teams like Fresno State and Utah State under new head coaches really showing some positive signs. So that's all you can really ask for out of these programs.
Eli Becker is my guest, and I am saying the name correctly, am I not?
No, you nailed it. Yeah, perfect.
Well, yeah, and I, you know, full disclosure, you, of course, coached me on this, which we so we let's be real clear on that. Eli is the lead men's college basketball writer for Mountain West Wire, and if you've not read him, you should. He puts out great stuff. Nevada, they're in first place, obviously, in the Mountain West, and it's just to the surprise of no one. I've seen them play on television and in person once, on television another five times, and each time, Eli, they weren't at their best, and of course they're getting an opponent's best shot. Now, the games I'm thinking of in particular that I've seen them against, USC and Arizona State down in Los Angeles, I saw them play South Dakota State. I had a special feeling for that just because of coming from Fargo and knowing that whole region, South Dakota State, North Dakota State. The Jacks definitely sneak up on some teams sometime. But, you know, I saw them in their Boise State game. And, you know, it seems like they're finally starting to look like the team that we thought they would be, in so much as they've struggled a little bit at times, and then they take control, and then sometimes the game gets closer at the end. But they've struggled in more games than I thought they would. They got beaten badly at the Pit, which that score is still a little bit deceiving. But are you seeing Nevada now starting to round into the tournament form that you expected them to be in?
Yeah, I am. I think these last three games have been really indicative of what Nevada is capable of being in terms of a legitimate postseason contender. They've only trailed, I believe, for 45 seconds over their last three games combined. A lot of their wins are now coming by double digits. The main thing for me when it comes to Nevada, a lot of people have mentioned this, it's their slow starts, and they've come out the gates really slow in some of their games, especially New Mexico, other conference games. Boise State was another one that they were fortunate to win with that Cody Martin three-pointer. If they're able to be the team that they want to be, I think they really need to play 40 minutes of complete basketball, and we've seen that recently. But again, this team has the tendency of maybe playing to their competition to a certain extent, settling for jumpers on offense, maybe not going after it as much as they could on defense, but the talent is there. Eric Musselman does an excellent job, and it would not surprise me if Nevada ran the table from now until the end of the regular season and really looked the part of a national contender that we thought they were going to be heading into the season.
I want to go back to what you were saying about the conference, because I think there's a lot to dig into there. Is this conference in a position that, a little bit like football for a while, that the name brand, and I've told our listeners here this, Eli, and some took issue with it, but, you know, having lived in the Midwest and the East Coast, the name brand for this conference for football, as you well know, has been Boise State. Yes, San Diego State's had some good teams. So has Fresno State. Fresno State right now is certainly, you know, a premier team in this conference. But the marquee name for what fans here would say too many years is Boise State. And what it takes for this conference is to have a Fresno State breakthrough last year and come within 5 minutes of winning the conference, this year winning it, then beating the Pac-12 in the Las Vegas Bowl, and had, as you well know, had UCF lost that game in their conference championship game, Fresno State would have been off to the Fiesta Bowl. But is for basketball, is it going to take another team, a Fresno State, a Utah State, to make a run to get to the conference championship game, to somehow find their way into the tournament, for not only media and basketball analysts and experts around the country to take note of the conference, but for recruits to be intrigued to play out here?
Yeah, I think it's a lot to digest. I think, first off, your football comparison is certainly on the point that I would make. And I think for the Mountain West to be as healthy as possible, I think it does start with what the conference considers is its blue bloods, which is New Mexico, UNLV, San Diego State, those programs that are usually at the top but have been struggling of late. But in terms of what we look at for this season, I do think it would take a significant run from Utah State, Fresno State, San Diego State. I think those are the three teams that are capable of making it interesting in the conference tournament in Vegas. But it really is the reality, I think, in my opinion, is that it's Nevada as the lock to get to the NCAA tournament. And then if anyone can knock off the Wolfpack, then they will also receive a bid to the NCAA tournament. But it's tough. A lot of folks have Utah State right on that bubble and Fresno State kind of looking on the outside in. I just don't think that they'll have enough on their resume come Selection Sunday in terms of quality wins and scheduling. So it'll be interesting to see what unfolds in the Mountain West tournament, but a lot of teams will have to step up, or the Mountain West could be faced with another one bid season.
Does it surprise you that there isn't more, and follow me for a moment here, that there's not more really ultra-talented recruits coming to this conference? The reason I say that is because you and I both know that in this day and age, even more than 20, 30, 40 years ago, much more, young players in every sport, in particular basketball and football, are looking at facilities. And this conference has some pretty amazing facilities in and of each one's own right. I mean, starting with a place like the Pitt, which is just for that place alone, I'm surprised that New Mexico isn't able to recruit some great talent every year. You have a cool, intimate environment like Colorado State's Moby Arena. You have Boise State and the Taco Bell, whatever we're calling it now. That's a cool place. It's been a UN, you know, it's been a regional site for many, many times for the NCAA tournament. Thomas and Mack, San Diego State's arena. There's a lot of really cool places. Lawler Center, and I'm hoping at some point that Save Mart Center here becomes a real difficult home environment as well. But that's one of the things, Eli, that surprises me, that this conference can't get even better talent than they get, because there are some the facilities in this conference stack up with just about, not all, but just about any conference at this level.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, and actually it's something that I researched just recently. A lot of folks don't know this. The Mountain West, their average home capacity of their arenas is actually larger than the Pac-12.
Oh.
And I think a lot of that has to do with Thomas and Mack Center with their capacity. Fresno State and Save Mart Center is obviously large as well. Viejas Arena hosts a number of NCAA tournament games. So the facilities are certainly on par with what they should be, I think, for a strong mid-major conference. But, again, if you're a recruit out in the West Coast, at least in my mind, I think you first look at the schools like UCLA, Cal when they're up. Oregon is a really good program now in terms of recruiting. Washington is on the rise as well. So I don't think the mid-majors, at least out of the Mountain West Conference, is going to be the first thing that you look at. But UNLV is capable of landing recruits. They got Brandon McCoy last year, five-star at San Diego State with Kawhi Leonard a handful of years back. Almost every program in this conference has gotten a really good recruit at some point. But unless they show consistent success as these top programs have, I just don't know if they'll be able to land the type of four-star, five-star recruits that the Pac-12 or the high major conferences are capable of getting on such a consistent basis.
My guest is the lead men's college basketball writer at the Mountain West Wire. He is Eli Boettger, does a great job. You can follow him on Twitter. It's at Boettger underscore Eli, E-L-I. So Saturday is a cool thing. I think it's the third year for this, and it'll be 9:30, I believe, our time. Men's Basketball Committee is going to release their top 16 teams that'll go through this week's games or through Friday's games. And it's essentially a bracket preview show. And I love that they do this. My prediction for the top four, and I told our listeners this before you came on, but I wanted to hear what you thought. And I don't see Nevada dropping past the second line. But my top four right now, in no particular order, are Tennessee, Duke, Virginia. And I'm moving Kentucky in there just because of the way they've been playing. They've been looking more and more like the dominant Kentucky team in the past. My second line is Gonzaga, Nevada, Michigan, and North Carolina. Where are you at?
Most of mine are pretty similar as yours. Duke, Virginia on the one line, Tennessee as well. For that fourth number one seed, I think that's when things get a little interesting. Michigan State, although they haven't been playing that well of late, they do have a number of quality wins. I believe last time I checked, they had 8 wins out of that first quadrant. I'm looking at it now, it's actually 9 victories. So they have a ton of quality wins. I know the committee likes that. Kentucky, Michigan, Gonzaga, North Carolina, Kansas, I think are all in that mix on that second line. Kansas, another team that has been tailing off, but they do have a number of quality wins to their name. And it's just something that the committee just loves to see. And as we saw last year with some of the teams that fell towards the bubble, Oklahoma, Arizona State, a lot of folks didn't believe that they belonged in the tournament, but those quality wins that they gathered earlier on in the year were enough to place them into that bracket. So I think that's something that I always I look at. As far as Nevada is going, because I know that you mentioned him or mentioned their team, I just am not super sold on what the Wolfpack have on paper, because their quadrant one is completely bare. They don't have a single result against a quadrant one opponent. Utah State is their best win to date. They're 37th in NET, so that currently falls under the second quadrant. So that's going to be something to monitor, because they do have that loss to New Mexico, which is a big dent on their resume, and don't have the quality wins as some of these top programs do. So I'm really curious. I think that they probably end up on that fourth seed line, which is quite interesting because they're currently ranked as the sixth best team in the country, but I just don't know if they have the resume to back it at this point.
I love these points that you're making, talking about the quadrant wins, because it brings into question for me, you know, we hit college football, as you would imagine, a lot on this program, and it's interesting how you look at the AP and coaches' rankings. I don't really pay much attention to the coaches' rankings, but the Associated Press rankings, and then we eventually get that first college football playoff ranking, and we see a little bit of a shakeup. We see teams that we didn't expect higher, and conversely ones lower. And for what we're talking about here, how much of the eye test, Eli, is put on the back burner when, in fact, a lot of times the eye test will tell you, it'll at least give you a different prism to look through at these teams that goes beyond the quadrant wins?
I think that's got to be the ultimate question when it comes to a lot of these teams that haven't played the top programs in the country. And what I've been mentioning now for a couple weeks is Nevada is almost receiving the Gonzaga-type treatment that has been going on with the Bulldogs in recent years. And that's that everyone knows that Nevada is a great basketball team. They got to the Sweet 16 last year. They've been in the top 10 the entire season. Ken Pom likes their numbers and all that. But they just don't have the quality wins at this point. Their schedule is set up so that they could be in a better position, but they scheduled three Pac-12 teams, Arizona State, USC, Utah, and all three of those have had lackluster seasons. So Nevada just has to continue to prove it every night, dominate the teams that they should be taking care of, and that's all that they can really do at this point. But going back to the eye test, I think that is going to be just so vastly important for Nevada, again, because the metrics don't really support them as much as they should, and the folks that are in that committee room need to understand, especially if you're a Nevada fan, that this is one of the better teams in America and should be treated as such.
Last thing for you, my friend, break down the game tonight. We've got Utah State and Fresno State. They're going to be tipping it off at about 7:30 or so. Utah State coming in 17-5. Fresno State 16-5. Both are 7-2 in the conference. Of course, everybody here certainly remembers the very dramatic win up in Logan. How do you see it tonight?
I think this will be a pretty low-scoring game. I think the defenses will really lock down. I would imagine this game probably ends up in the 60s. The matchup that I am most curious about is in the front court. I love Nate Grimes and Nemias Keita. I think those are two of my favorite big men in this country. That's going to be a big matchup. I think getting on the offensive boards will be pretty big for both of these teams. Second chance opportunities could determine who wins tonight. I think this could come down to the last possession or two, and that is definitely rare this season because it seems like almost every game has been decided by 10 or 15 points, but expect a good one tonight. I think Utah State wins this one by a bucket, but would not be surprised if it goes Fresno State's way.
Very good. And listen, you have to promise me you'll come back when we get a little bit closer to the Mountain West tournament, because I'm glad that we finally had you on. I really appreciate your insights, and let's get you back again.
Thanks so much, Christopher. I appreciate it, and your listeners for wanting me on. Thanks
all right,
so much.
There you go. Eli Becker, folks. He's the lead men's basketball writer, college basketball writer for the Mountain West Wire. That's good stuff.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
A few more minutes before we finish up this hour. We are live from Eagle Springs Golf and Country Club. Again, still channeling Jim Nantz. Hello, friends. Just a beautiful morning out here. The sun's up on the hills, looking at the hills. It's a beautiful, crisp, clear day. It's about 44, 45 degrees. We're out here for the 39th annual Dugout Club Golf Classic. It's 36 degrees. I'm sorry, it's 36 degrees right now, courtesy of promotions director Vivian, 36 degrees. And, of course, we're also joined by Patrick, who's no longer an intern now. He's working with us. You remember Patrick Bellany on his great defensive line days with Fresno State. But, it's a little chilly out here this morning, but it's nothing wrong with that. We're okay. We're okay with that kind of weather. You know, last night, you look at all the problems that the Lakers have had with the failed hope to trade for Anthony Davis. And, boy, did the Pelicans work the room. I swung and missed on that. I really believed that the Lakers were going to get that deal done. But who knew that the Pelicans were working the room, reading the room, and they toyed with the Lakers. But what do the Lakers do? They go out and they beat the Boston Celtics on a Rajon Rondo shot at the end of the game. But if you're in that locker room, how do you play the next 27 games with LeBron when you know that LeBron basically wanted to trade everybody? And this is what LeBron does. This is what LeBron James does. He did it with Cleveland last year. You know, we need a few new guys, and Two, three guys are out. Two, three new guys are in. I mean, that's what he does. And, I'm feeling like LeBron, maybe he and Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma and Lonzo Ball and the rest of the guys, maybe they need some alone time. Maybe they need a little retreat. Maybe, you know, somebody makes some brownies, some hot chocolate, and they all just have a little get-together, and they just share their feelings. The classic closed-door meeting. Because in all seriousness, this is a team that was they got to the number five spot. They might have even gotten up to the number four spot before LeBron got injured. And obviously, you take LeBron off that team, and the Lakers are essentially the same team as they were last year. Yeah, they've got some new pieces, but they weren't going to be much better without a LeBron James this year. They weren't going to be much better than 35-47, which is what they were last year. But I said with LeBron all year, they were going to win 50 games, and they were on pace to win 49 games. Until LeBron went down with an injury, he was out for 17 games, and that's certainly impacted them on their journey to try to get to a playoff spot. I still believe, I think that, you know, we are in this era of overreacting, where the most recent narrative has now been the Lakers aren't going to go anywhere, the Lakers aren't going to make the playoffs, and I think that's wrong. I think these are still professionals, and there might be some hurt feelings, there might be some frustrations, but and we might not, if you're a Lakers fan, I'm not, but if you're a Lakers fan, you might not like the way things have unfolded, but if you're a player in that locker room, you have a job to do. You have a job to do, and your job is to go out and win basketball games. And I fully expect that the Lakers are still going to make the playoffs. I don't know that they're going to be able to get to a number four, number five spot like I thought they were going to. And the way they were positioned before that, but I just how do you go forward? How do you go forward when you know that you were one of the guys that LeBron was putting up on a platter and saying, I don't think we need you. You know, Paul Loeffler has arrived, and that means that hour two can actually happen. But we had stuff for you in case Paul didn't come. But Paul was coming. Paul doesn't miss a chance to be here. Fresno State baseball, Paul Loeffler. There you go. Hour number two is on the way, and we are here for the 39th annual Dugout Club Golf Classic at Eagle Springs Golf and Country Club. Beautiful morning. I was wrong. It's not 41 degrees. It's 36 degrees here in the northern reaches of Fresno. We're practically in the Rockies here, or maybe the Sierra Nevada. Hour two coming up next. This is the CGP.
The studios of 940 ESPN in Fresno, California. This is the Christopher Gabriel Program.
Hour number two, CGP, live from Eagle Springs Golf and Country Club, begins right at this very moment. 3 minutes, 38 seconds past the hour of 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Beautiful morning here in the Central Valley of California. As I said, we're out at Eagle Springs. The sun is up. The temperature, it's almost to 40. This is my kind of weather. And I am joined by the voice of the Bulldogs, Fresno State football, basketball, baseball, Mr. Everything, my good friend Paul Loeffler. Good morning to you, my friend.
Well, good morning. Isn't it beautiful?
It's gorgeous. I've been out here before, but I've never been to Eagle Springs. I've had some friends out in the area. This is a beautiful place.
You know, it is. It's a phenomenal course. Johnny Miller designed it.
Oh, I didn't know that. Is that right?
Yeah, and so it's tough. It's a tough course. But today's conditions, I think, are going to be really nice for all the alums who are coming back to play in this tournament. And I don't know about you. I guess you left your house a little earlier than I did this morning. I caught a break. But the time that I was driving up, spectacular vistas, beautiful views.
We did not have that.
A little dark?
It's a little dark. And I was joking on the way in, Paul, that I think somewhere along the line, People have forgotten that when they're driving on a road with their brights on and they see headlights coming at them, it's always a nice courtesy to turn your brights off for that brief moment. And both Vivian came up in the ESPN van with Patrick, and they had the same deal. So it was dark, and this is kind of a – Fryant's kind of a fun, winding road.
Yeah.
And, boy, if you don't know the road, you better be careful. One guy went by me at about 85. And I just, why? But, yeah, was the sun actually up over the hills when you were on your way out here?
Yeah, and it was beautiful. And, hey, thank the Lord it's not foggy or anything. That's when it's really scary what you're talking about. But, yeah, I'm driving up Fryant, and, you know, that fresh snow that we got that's so low, we got that low snow, so you see the snow in the background, the sun's coming up, the hills are green, then you get up to Millerton Lake, and then it's all reflecting off the lake, and it's just like, man, do I need to pull over and take some pictures here, or should I go ahead and get out to Eagle Springs? So for all those Bulldog alums who are coming out to play the golf tournament today, they're going to get that beautiful view. And, man, how about the blue skies? Perfect day for golf.
Fantastic day for golf. And you know, one thing, as long as we're talking about the blue skies, one thing about yesterday, I was driving on Shepherd, and I turned onto Shepherd and looked east, and my goodness, was it magnificent seeing the Sierra Nevada and the snow-capped mountains. It's as clear as I've seen them this winter, Paul.
Well, that's what happens when we get a good storm like that, right? It clears everything out. And then guys like Stan Bush show up, who, you know, played for this program 60 years ago and is running this golf tournament today. And he used to coach up here in these mountains at Sierra High School, so he knows it very well. But, yeah, I mean, that's what makes this such a beautiful place to live. It's the people, it's, you know, the weather, and it's the scenery. And sometimes we forget that because of the fog or sometimes the smog. But, man, this week it's been beautiful.
Yeah, it really has. It reminds me of when I was in college in Southern California, and you'd get to January and February, and you forgot. I mean, even we're talking about Los Angeles, how beautiful the area is with the San Gabriel Mountains and the Santa Monica Hills. And when the smog was cleared, it was for a couple of months absolutely breathtaking to look at it. Well, we are here, as I mentioned, for the 39th annual Dugout Club Golf Classic. And where did it used to be? I'm sure it hasn't always been here.
Well, you know, it's been here. We'll have to ask Stan. We'll get Stan on a little bit later and ask him. But for as long as I can remember, it's been here. Even before I was doing the Bulldog games on the radio and I was covering them on TV, it was out here. And that, you know, this has been a big deal over the years. You know, you see guys who are currently in the major leagues coming back to play the tournament. Now the timeline has changed a little bit because of, you know, spring training starting earlier and college baseball starting late. So you don't get as many of those active major leaguers. But there'll be guys here today who played in the big leagues, who coached in the big leagues, who are college All-Americans, who are national champions. And it just reminds you of how much incredible history this program has. And I just mentioned a guy, Stan Bush. We'll get him on the radio with us here in a little later. 60 years ago, this is the 60th anniversary this
incredible.
Year of the first College World Series team, and you still have guys from that team, and he's not the only one who support this program year after year and come to all the games at home.
Well,
I mean, crazy.
I want to ask you something about something that, and this has everything to do with Fresno State baseball, and it has to do with Jeremy Pruitt, what he said at Tennessee. He was at a recruiting event, and he said, well, it sure is a lot easier to sell the University of Tennessee when you look on the TV screen in a young man's home and your basketball team is kicking the you-know-what out of somebody. And Paul, I said to you back in the fall, I said, "What, you know, how much does it affect in a positive way the rest of the athletic department at Fresno State when every athlete in that department is looking at the football team and seeing a team that is going out and doing the same thing? They're setting the bar. They're setting a tone. Yeah, they picked up a couple of losses here. That was all they picked up, was a couple of losses. They have a 12-2 year, and I've got to believe that there's been a carryover to the basketball team where they're 16-6 now. They're still in very good shape, but not as good as they were before the Utah State game. But as we work our way into Fresno State baseball, they're aware of what's going on. Coach Batesel's aware of what's going on. Those players are aware of what's going on, and I think they all want to kind of carry that baton and keep it going.
You know, I think you're right, and we've seen this before. It kind of goes in waves. You think about the 1980s when Jim Sweeney had an undefeated team. And, oh, by the way, you know, Bob Bennett is hosting regionals at the stadium now named for him. Boyd Grant had it rolling in basketball. Fresno State wins the NIT. They're in the NCAA the next year and get knocked out by Carl Malone, the mailman, and La Tech. Softball was a perennial national contender for all those years, and you see that wave rising, and now I think we do see it coming back. Football the last 2 years has been incredible. Basketball, this will be their fourth straight 20-win season, and the momentum they have right now with a first-year head coach I think is greater than really at any point in the last decade. And, yeah, I think it's time for baseball to be back in the postseason, and I think we're going to see that this year. And, you know, when Mike Batesel gets here later to show off his golf swing, I hope you're listening, Coach. We can talk to him about that because he came to the Boise State football game this year, and we had him on our pregame show, you may remember, Game Day Live, you're the host.
Yep.
You remember what he said about, you know, if he could do it all over again, he'd be a middle linebacker.
Yeah.
He'd play football. And he loves football. He loves the toughness of it, the grit. And these coaches do. They feed off each other. You know, Natalie Benson, a good friend of yours with the water polo team, you see her interact with football coaches or baseball coaches, and they're like, yeah, it's competition. It gets the juices flowing. And these student-athletes all know each other. So, you know, you get a football player talking to a softball player, a baseball player talking to a water polo player, and they all have a common language they share. They fire each other up. They fuel that success. They fuel that optimism. And how much, I mean, just to what you do or anyone does, Christopher, how much of it is up here? How much is mental and psychological?
No, that's a great point, Paul. And you mentioned Natalie Benson, Coach Batesel. We've talked about Troy Steiner. And it reminds me of all our game day lives when we would have the honorary captains segment every home game, and we would, the question that Cam and I would always ask them, everyone for the last couple of years, is when you're in the weight room, when you're in the halls of the athletic complex and what have you, in the offices, you know, how much interaction did you have with other athletes? And to a man and woman, every one of them says we're watching them, and we saw how well that team was doing, and we wanted to be doing that same thing for Fresno State and for the Central Valley.
Yeah, and one of the other funny things you see is how, you know, you fast forward a few years and you look back and all of a sudden here's a couple, they've been married for 20 years, 30 years, and they met while both competing at Fresno State.
Yeah.
And we're going to that World Ag Expo next week in Tulare. One of my first guests is going to be Josh Lavandera, who maybe will be here today playing golf, All-American at Fresno State. His wife, Becky, national champion of Fresno State on the softball team. And now we're looking forward to seeing their kids compete maybe in Bulldog uniforms someday. Tonight at the double play dinner that Fresno State baseball puts on, you know, Mark Gardner will be there. And of course, his late wife, Lori, was a phenomenal softball player. And it'll be fun catching up with Mark today. But it's amazing what these young people do while they're in school, what it turns into down the line, all the businesses that they start or they operate. And, you know, things like today, this event, this golf tournament, it's just a lot of fun. It's raising money. But it also reminds you of what can happen when people are kind of united behind one idea.
No, there's no question about it. Chris, you're listening to Paul Leffler, Christopher Gabriel. We are out at Eagle Springs Golf and Country Club. We are here for the 39th Annual Dugout Club Golf Classic. As Paul and certainly all of you know, and every year this is part of the kind of goes hand-in-hand with the alumni game. And players come back, gentlemen, you know, coaches come back. We'll expect Mike Batesel a little bit later. You mentioned Stan Bush and what have you. You know, last year, I have last year's standings in front of me, Paul, and I looked back at the Mountain West tournament, and of course, Fresno State just missed out on that by a game, essentially, behind UNLV. The four teams that made it in, Nevada, San Diego State, San Jose State, UNLV. They started out last year, if I recall, sweeping Michigan State.
Yeah.
And the year before, Michigan State had done the same thing to them out in East Lansing. They got off to a great start. They finished 30-24, 13-17 in the conference. I'm assuming that with recruiting and with you know, young guys getting a little bit older, that Coach Batesel is looking for an even better year than six games over 500.
Without question. They've got a really tough schedule. This is one of the first years I can remember where they're away from home more than they're at home. That's very different for this program. But what that does is it builds your RPI points. They're playing some real quality teams. They're a little older as a team. Mm-hmm. They're going to score a lot of runs. The question for me right now is how are they going to come through under pressure on the mound? They have some very talented young men who are going to pitch. And if they're up to the challenge, I think we're going to see a special season at Fresno State. We can talk about that schedule a little bit. But part of the fuel for the fire, too, I think, will be what happened last year. they didn't expect to miss out on the Mountain West tournament without, you know, one really unfortunate situation in San Diego that led to a young man being ejected and a game get away from them. They probably would have been in that tournament.
Yeah.
Maybe they would have won it the way they were playing down the stretch. But we can go into some of the personnel and the talent, but when I think about it for this year for Coach Batesel, I think he's going to have a really tough job for this reason. What's your lineup like every day? Because he has so many guys that can get it done, so many guys who can really swing the bat and hit for power. He's going to have some tough choices, and how he manages that and who plays their way to the forefront, that's going to be a fun kind of horse race to watch all season long. But the schedule, in my mind, is one of the best I've seen in the last decade.
Well, you mentioned the schedule, and just some of the teams that jump out immediately at you on there are UC Stanford. Is on there. Fullerton is on there. They're going to play a weekend series out in Knoxville, Tennessee at Lindsey Nelson Stadium against the Tennessee Vols. There's a lot of testing and measuring going on with those kinds of series. And as you mentioned, the lineup, how much testing and measuring does Coach Batesel look at when they open up with a four-game series against Utah Valley, testing different lineups? Who's going to bat third, fourth, fifth, and so on?
Yeah, I think you'll see some of that. You know, we'll get a feel for whether there's some platooning that needs to happen at certain positions. I think what I'll be more intrigued by is the pitching staff. You know, so you open with a four-game series, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. That Monday afternoon game on February 18th will again be a chance to honor Fresno State's incredible connection with Japanese-American baseball history, not just in the Valley but throughout the country. And that's going to be a special day. That weekend is big for the Japanese-American community. It's the anniversary of Executive Order 9066 that incarcerated all of them on the West Coast 77 years ago now. So that's always a special opportunity and a way to engage the community. But you have four games there, so that really tests your pitching staff. So what's your rotation look like? Who's going to step up and give you great innings off the bat? That sets a tone for what's happening moving forward. And it's important because the very next weekend, they're playing four games in San Diego against schools whose names you recognize and who have been postseason contenders in recent years.
No question about it. One of those schools, we mentioned Cal State Fullerton, Missouri State's going to be out there, and Utah from the Pac-12, Kansas State from the Big 12. You know, there was a time in college baseball, and as somebody who went to USC at the time, the great programs there. My first year at USC, there was five national champions. One of them was the baseball team winning in Omaha, beating Arizona State to make a five-game sweep out there. But college baseball used to be USC, Arizona State, and some schools on the West Coast, and it was pretty much them and everybody else. That has really changed now, and we've seen that change in softball as well, where the players are, there's so many good programs in the Big Ten, in the Southeastern Conference, and it makes the job of a Mike Batesel even harder to recruit, because you're not just recruiting against the California schools, you're recruiting against everybody.
Yeah, you're recruiting against everybody, and the resources that those schools have are different, and it all goes back to the BCS. That's where it started. It was the money that those television rights pumped into the Power 5 schools, as we know them now, that changed their program. So instead of baseball and softball and women's basketball and these other sports being big at some schools and an afterthought at others, all of a sudden, all those teams in the Power Conference had millions of dollars to fund all their other sports. So whereas 30 years ago, let's say, Fresno State really could compete with anybody in baseball or softball from a recruiting standpoint, from a facility standpoint, hosting tournaments, now you're looking at teams that have budgets that are not just twice as big as Fresno State. It might be three, four, five times as big for those sports. So it's changed the playing field. It's made the job tougher, but you know what people in the Valley are like. They don't care. They're going to keep fighting. They're going to find a way. That's what Pat Hill did with the football program. That's what Mike Batesel has done with this baseball program. That's what you have to do. It's part of the job. And if you can build that success over time, you see what Jeff Tedford's doing right now with that football program and what you already said, the residual effect or the snowball effect for the rest of the program. You keep that going over time. You have good leadership in place. You have the community investing. You know, more money means more opportunities. More money means, hey, you can host a baseball tournament again, or more softball tournaments, or, you know, with the basketball team. Maybe you get back to the point we used to in Fresno have an exempt tournament for basketball every year. Sellin Arena would host it. It moved to the Save Mart Center. All those things are little advantages for your program. They're advantages in recruiting. The opportunity to take overseas trips for some of those sports, all those things really come down to dollars and cents. And how do you get people confident enough to invest those dollars in you? Well, you have good leadership and you win on the field. And I think we're seeing that building here in Fresno right now.
Paul, you're involved with the baseball program much more. You're dialed into their history much more than me. You've been here for so long. You know, when we look at football recruiting, one of the things that we talk about the kids look at is in football more than any other sport at the collegiate level are the facilities. You're looking at the stadium. You're looking at the athletic center. You're looking at the weight room. You're looking at all of those things, and those are, you see that sort of at the facilities wars, Oregon, Ohio State, Tennessee, Alabama, all of these schools, and on the West Coast, you see things happening at Colorado State with their new stadium. San Diego State's going to be building a new one in the next couple of years. With baseball, how much do facilities play into the recruiting of that?
Well, I think it's a big factor, and that was a real plus for Fresno State for a long time. When they, you know, when they redid Biden Field in 1984, it was the jewel of college baseball. It was a big deal, and it's still a beautiful facility. But since then, a lot of teams have stepped up their game. You just mentioned Oregon. They didn't have a baseball program for 30 years. We're going back there this year, and I'm looking forward to seeing that stadium now, because when the first year Oregon brought back their program, I believe it was 09, Fresno State played the very first game in that new park, and they didn't even have stands yet. It was like the Masters. They had the temporary green bleachers up there. But, I mean, in a matter of a couple years, they have one of the best baseball stadiums in college baseball because they have millions and millions of dollars of Nike money. And the same dynamic we talked about with the BCS, that funded stadium improvements in the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC and all these places, they have beautiful facilities. Baseball's a little different, though, in that unlike basketball and football, you don't have full scholarships. You know, you have 11.7 scholarships for a whole baseball team. So nobody on that team is getting more than a 50% scholarship. A lot of guys aren't getting anything. They have to want to be there. They have to feel a connection to the program. And with the history of Fresno State baseball, you have young men who grow up in the Valley saying, hey, yeah, when I was a toddler, that team won the national championship. Or I heard about them winning the national championship. Or I know that Aaron Judge went to Fresno State. I mean, you can't go anywhere in this country without seeing a 99 jersey and pinstripes. Mm-hmm. And they find out Aaron Judge went to Fresno State. I want to go play at Fresno State. So you have to tap into that willpower, that belief, that idea, and then you get the right guys. And if you look at Mike Batesel's roster, you're going to see a lot of guys who are right here from the Valley who feel that connection, that investment, and that understanding when they succeed on the field. It means something beyond just that locker room. It means something to the university, to the community, and to the whole Valley.
Of course, the familiar voice you're listening to is the longtime voice of Fresno State Athletics, football, basketball, and baseball, which is why we are here. Paul Leffler, I'm Christopher Gabriel. We will take a pause. We are at Eagle Springs Golf and Country Club for the 39th annual Dugout Club Golf Classic. We've got some guests coming your way. Great to be out here. And just, boy, I tell you what, I look back at my friends this morning in the Midwest where they are dealing with below zero temperatures, lots of snow, lots of ice, and it is a gorgeous, crisp morning here in the Central Valley of California. This is the Christopher Gabriel Program.
More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
Glad you are waking up with us. 38 degrees this morning in Fresno here in the Central Valley. We are live at Eagle Springs Golf and Country Club out here in North Fresno, way out on Friant. Just a beautiful, beautiful morning out here. I'm joined by good friend Paul Leffler, voice of Fresno State Athletics. Now, we are going to be here. We are here for the 39th annual Dugout Club Golf Classic. Lots of Fresno State baseball alums, former players, maybe some who have made it up to the major leagues or were in the major leagues for a while, will be joining Paul and myself, and certainly taking part in this. Paul, you going to be playing today?
No, you know, I can't. I made a commitment to Clovis Rotary to go here. It's going to be a great speech about organ donation. I spoke there a few weeks ago, but today they're hearing from a young lady, Carolyn Dixon, who received a lung transplant.
Wow.
So I'm looking forward to hearing her story there. Plus, nobody wants to see me swing the golf clubs. That's the real reason. It's pretty embarrassing when I get out there.
You know, our management, our owners are always – asking me to join them for stuff as well. And I said, listen, I am good to – I'll drive the cart. I'll carry your clubs. But I just – you know, I go about as far as maybe playing a par three. You know, that's about as far. I stay in your lane, and that's kind of where I'm at. By the way,
stay in the fairway. That's my problem. I can hit it a mile, but I can't hit it straight.
Yes, that's exactly right. Well, as I said, we are at Eagle Springs, and people are handing us food, and it's just a wonderful thing. But we're gonna get a headset on Stan Bush. He is a former player. And he goes back to 1959. Wow. Let's get you up, Christopher.
I think we got it backwards there, Stan.
Yeah, let's get you. There we go. Now we're all set. He played on the first College World Series team. Is that right?
Right. 1959, first time the Bulldogs. That's 60 years ago. Amazing. They're going to honor these guys later this year at Pete Biden Field at Bob Bennett Stadium.
Thanks for joining us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
So... there's so many different things that we can ask you about. I guess maybe the obvious starting point is from when you played to where the program is at now. What's the biggest change that you have seen in players?
Well, I think most of the players coming in nowadays have been playing a lot longer baseball. You know, they start them very young. By the time they get here, they're pretty well skilled. But when I was playing, I didn't play baseball until I got to high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so, luckily, I was at Central High and played 4 years there. So, you know, that was my baseball.
And As opposed to year-round travel teams from the age of six? Yeah,
and that was it. Most of the players also played three or four sports, you know.
Which is making a comeback, which is something I'm excited about, that more and more experts, more and more scientists, more and more coaches are pointing out the value of playing multiple sports and not singling out one and specializing in one sport too early, because you may miss out on your real potential or real ability.
Yeah, I think some of the things that they've said is that you use certain muscles and you keep using those muscles all the time and you do something different and you hurt yourself.
And don't you think, Stan and Paul, that one of the things I've noticed, I'm not from the Central Valley, but my kids are in Clovis Unified, and I've seen with Clovis Unified and with Fresno Unified, there is a real push to get kids to test and measure, to try different sports, to really see what might interest you or what you might be good at, about developing the whole body.
Right.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I'm sure. Yeah. Your kids are about the same age, or in that general.
14
area.
And 12.
Yeah,
and they have a cheerleading competition tomorrow. That's their story.
So do mine.
Yeah.
Same competition.
Uh oh. It's on now.
Look out! It is on.
Uh oh.
Stan, can we
place
keep,
your money?
Stan, can we keep you here a little bit longer?
Sure.
Okay, we need to take a quick pause. It's Christopher Gabriel program. I'm joined by Paul Leffler, Stan Bush from the 1959 Fresno State baseball team. Looking good. Looking like he's ready to go out and play. Are you playing today? Are you playing some golf today?
No.
Okay.
He's running the show.
Yeah, you're running
he's
the whole
put
thing.
Out all
Yeah, you got the minions. They're all for fun. Yes, Mr. Bush. Yes, Mr. Bush. All right, we're going to take a quick pause. This is the Christopher Gabriel program.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
Well, the donuts have arrived, and I'm looking over there, and I may need to find my way over there at some point, just give the whole program over to Paul Leffler.
I'm in your way right now. I don't think you can get to him.
Yeah, Paul's like he's blocking me to get to the rim. We're joined by Stan.
I made that mistake yesterday and paid the price, by the way.
Stan Bush is here. He goes back to the 1959 team. You guys were talking about 1961. Can you share some of that about what was going on and ineligibility, and this is quite a story.
Yeah, as far as what happened in 61 was that they had a rule in the league that we played in, which was California Collegiate Athletic Association, that if you went to a junior college for 2 years, you could have 3 more years of eligibility. So in 1961, when we rolled around, we were number 2 in the nation. And myself, Augie Garrido, and Gene Graves, who was a 10-0 pitcher, were ruled ineligible. Now, Augie and I've always said, they could have got by without Augie and I, but they needed Gene Graves because we lost two out of three to USC that year. And if we'd had Graves, he would have been the number three pitcher, you know, our third starter, and that would have been the difference.
And that's, Christopher, why I think what happened a little over a decade ago in 2008 with Fresno State winning the national championship, it was a little bit like, I think it was a bigger version of what you experienced with football this year, mm-hmm. finally beating Boise State, all the close calls. So here Stan and his teammates play in Omaha in 1959. 2 years later, they have a team that can win in Omaha. They're that good. They're that talented. And it's that situation that derails them. And there's five or six other teams like that. The 1967 team had Stanford on the ropes to go to Omaha, didn't get it done. Teams in the 80s were this close to going to Omaha. So when in 2008 they not only went, but they won it all, in my mind, and Stan can say this better than I did, to me it fulfilled all those dreams that guys like Stan and all these other alums had been holding for all these decades. Does that sound about right, Stan? Is that what it felt like?
Yeah.
Stan, so to follow up with what Paul's saying, we're joined by Stan Bush, Paul Leffler, Christopher Gabriel. We're out at Eagle Springs Golf and Country Club for the 39th annual Dugout Club Golf Classic. Stan, we were talking about the mental aspect of sports. We were talking about it as it applies to football and basketball. But in baseball, we don't always think about it as much, but it does play a role, does it not?
Oh, yeah. You know. It's the same thing when you're facing a pitcher and he's got your number. He's got your number, you know. You got to fight through it. I knew myself, and I'm sure a lot of guys did, when you get two strikes, you tell yourself, he's not going to strike me out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really bear down. And I think in those days, the older days, you would choke up on the bat and make sure that your strike zone is smaller now. But I think, keep losing this, they don't do that anymore. I don't see these kids choking up and guarding the zone with two strikes. So the mental aspect of it is there. Now, as far as we did, we had a lot of competition at practice, mm-hmm. you know, mentally. We had pitchers in inter-squad games that didn't want you to hit the ball. And so, you know, you didn't dig in.
Coming high and tight sometimes.
Yeah.
And the helmets were a little different.
Yes, I'm sure.
There was a hat. That was your helmet.
Exactly. Hey, how long have you been putting this golf tournament together, Stan? How long have you been working
on
it?
Well, I've been with it about 15 years now. I think this is my 14th year, but you know, this is the 39th year, so somebody's been doing it a lot longer than I did, or it's been going on longer, and so it kind of runs itself now. You know what you need to do. It's not like starting from scratch.
How hard is it to the logistics of putting something like this together? You said it just pretty much runs itself now, but getting in touch with a lot of the former players and making those contacts, does that end up being a lengthy, involved process, or are they contacting you and saying, you know, I'm coming?
Yeah, most of them do, but like this year we're down a few golfers than we normally have, and so the last week or so you're on the phone calling them, see if they're coming, if they got a foursome. Well, I got three, and I need another one. I said, well, send me your three and bring the other one.
And Christopher, this is what has always amazed me about this program. You know, college baseball, there are some schools where you can't get 50 people in a game or 200 people in a game. Fresno State, if you go down the third baseline at any home game, you're going to find some of the greatest players who ever played here. And it might have been 20 years ago, it might have been 50 or 60 years ago, but they're still involved in the program. They have that pride and that investment, and I think that's one of the things. You talked about recruiting earlier. When recruits see that, when they see the connection of the alumni and the community, that's a big selling point, and it's people like Stan and some of his teammates, even who are still involved in the program, that to me makes it a big deal. So I wonder, Stan. Why? Where does that come from? Did you see other people staying connected with the program before you played? Or what has it been that has kept you so connected to your alma mater for six decades?
That's hard to say. I think, you know, you have ties. You're buddies that you played with, the ones you knew before that played. And it's kind of just a fraternity, you might say, get them to games.
One of the things that you talk about facilities, and this might sound like a simplistic point, but somebody had the right idea having that stadium facing Cedar. Because I've had a couple of neighbors last year say that they would drive by, they'd see the lights on, and they'd say, "You know, I got nothing going on. I'm going to go right over there and go to a game." And the park is positioned beautifully, as opposed to being buried somewhere where maybe you don't necessarily notice it. And that leads me to this. We talked about the 59 team, we talked about the 61 team, of course the team that won it all 10 years ago or so, 10, 11 years ago. When you look at this program now under Coach Batesel, what do you see as the ceiling for this team? We're talking about recruiting, and there's so many more programs now that Fresno State is going up against, not only here in California on the West Coast, but around the country, players or schools coming to the Central Valley trying to pluck players out. What's the ceiling for this program now?
Well, I think it's as high as it wants to go. It seems like one year we got pitching and can't get hitting. The next year we got hitting and we got young pitchers, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it's that, and what brings you together or what occurs, it's hard to say. I mean, we had chemistry. We were always riding each other, you know, playfully. And kind of poking you this, if you did something wrong, mental error, you had to live that down for 3 or 4 days, you know.
When you look back at your career, and I know it's been a few years, but one of the things I always like to ask former players is, as you look back on your career, what was the most fun part of playing at Fresno State?
I think our inter-squad games. I mean, they were competitive, you know. And with Pete, you know, we called him the fox, the gray fox, because he'd disappear. And you didn't know where he was, so you couldn't be messing around. I remember one day, we practiced across the street where the softball diamond is now, but we faced towards the gym instead of Cedar. And the wind was blowing. And all of a sudden, I don't know where it came from, there's this big box in center field. And one of the players gets in the box, you know. And all of a sudden, Pete's beside the box. You talk about getting chewed out.
Mm-hmm. That's what's been neat to Christopher over the years. There's so many guys who played for Pete Biden who have kept his legacy alive, who followed in his coaching footsteps. I mean, if you look around the Valley, it's hard to find a coach who you can't trace back to Pete Biden somehow, some way. And guys like Stan and so many others from that era, they tell you stories about Pete Biden where even if you didn't play for him or you weren't around him or you weren't even alive yet, like many of the fans now, I think you get a sense for who he was and how much he meant and how much he changed not just the baseball program but the university and the Valley. I think the rich baseball tradition we have in the Valley, a lot of it has to do with Pete Biden's influence.
Yeah, Pete and Bob.
Bob Bennett following.
Bob, yes.
Bob's another one of Pete's players, right? Yeah. And there you go.
There's an interesting continuity or maybe thread of commonality with a lot of the coaches at this university who have been here before and who are there now. And the word that comes to mind when I've read about Bennett and Biden and Pat Hill and certainly Jeff Tedford and now guys like coaches like Troy Steiner or Natalie Benson, and the word that comes to mind is toughness. There is a toughness about these – there's nobody soft here. Everybody's teams play a certain style – and there's a certain grit and mentality that seems to run through this athletic department. It's remarkable. It's unmistakable.
I think that has a lot to do with the community, too, don't you?
Maybe the industries that
thrive around here, just the way people are brought up. And that's something that, and again, you know, I'm using Stan as an example here because he's one of these alumni. But I think a lot of that has to do with the bar that they set and the standard that they uphold and keeping that connection to the past. Because if you lose that connection, you know, where's the accountability?
Yeah.
Where's the standard? Where's what you're trying to shoot for? What are you most looking forward to this year, Stan, with this baseball program?
I want to see these young pitchers mature.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, you know, we got enough returning experience for hitting. So if they can get it going, I think it's could be a good year.
I'm with you. Yep.
Well, Stan, it's been a pleasure having you join us.
Thank you very much.
I've heard your name many times. I've never had a chance to meet you, so it's great to meet you in person. You couldn't have asked for a better day for your tournament.
Yeah, all we need to do is get the heat up now, and we'll be okay.
The sun's working on it. I saw it back there.
Especially where we're standing.
It's a little chilly over here. That's right. The sun's not going to find its way to us. Folks, he's Stan Bush and goes deep in Fresno State baseball. Glad you're hanging out with us. One more segment for the CGP. My source is telling me that Paul may stay out here a little longer. Do a little longer broadcast. Is that right?
Well, I don't know. You think we should?
Yeah, it's a possibility. We'll figure it out. We'll
talk about it when we come back.
Yeah, exactly right. This is the Christopher Gabriel Program.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
One more segment to finish out the hour here at Eagle Springs Golf and Country Club. Keep saying it. I'll say it over and over. It's a beautiful morning out here, coming up on 40 degrees, coming up on 8:51 this morning out here for the 39th annual Dugout Club Golf Classic. Big event. Paul Leffler joining me for this hour, and we may go longer. We just haven't decided yet. We'll just figure it out.
I just decided.
Okay.
I'm going to stay till 10 o'clock.
All right.
Because there are a bunch of ex-dogs who I haven't seen in a while, and I think our listeners would like to hear from them, too. There's some current Bulldogs. I was just talking to Zach Ashford and Zach Presno, the double Zach attack. We might hear from them a little later. But I think we have more than enough to entertain our 50,000-watt audience with some Bulldog baseball characters until 10 o'clock. So I'll stick around.
Okay.
Did you get your donut? Did you eat it already?
There was a donut that was split in half, so I took half Did you get any?
Not yet.
All right.
Not yet.
There's a couple with your name on it over there. You know, you have the schedule right in front of us. We talked about some of the names on there that are some larger names that Fresno State is going to be playing. Cal State Fullerton's on there. Stanford's on there. Preseason top 10. Tennessee out in Knoxville's on there. What jumps out at you about this particular schedule this year?
Well, college baseball, you were talking about a little earlier how the Power Five schools have stepped up their game in college baseball over the years, and what that's led to is this metric, the RPI, that determines postseason bids. So 64 teams get into the NCAA tournament for baseball, and it's gone more and more to the power conferences. And if you're not in a power conference, the way you overcome that is with a great RPI. And how do you build a big RPI? You win on the road, because road games count for more points in the goofy RPI formula.
Right.
Don't get me started. I always go back to 2008. Fresno State wins the national championship. They calculate the RPI after Fresno State wins the national championship. And that formula says they're the 46th best team in the country.
Ridiculous.
But, so, RPI-wise, this is a great schedule. Three games on the road at Tennessee, four games on the road at Oregon, road game at Stanford, neutral site games against Fullerton and Kansas State and Utah and Missouri State, who are all good RPI builders. So if you fare well in those games, even if you go 500 in those games, that's going to really up your resume as far as the committee that ultimately decides. And then, of course, you have the conference season, and, you know, there are going to be some good battles there. UNLV has one of the top players in the country as far as the scouts are concerned, and their shortstop, Bryson Stott. So scouts will be there watching him. Fresno State pitchers will have, you know, their work cut out and have a chance to prove something. Nevada's coming off winning the league last year in the regular season, but they didn't win the tournament, so they've got an axe to grind, and that's where the tournament will be this year. San Diego State, in my mind, San Diego State and Fresno State are the two teams with the most talent. And you're going to have some great battles with the Aztecs, both here in the Valley and down at Tony Gwynn Stadium. And the Bulldogs are playing in that tournament, the Tony Gwynn Legacy, in just a couple weeks with all those power teams. So there are a lot of things in this schedule that get me excited. And one thing that's cool about baseball is how quickly momentum can build.
Mm-hmm.
You know, football, you have to wait a week to play. Basketball, you're waiting 3 or 4 days unless it's tournament time. Baseball, you have a good weekend, all of a sudden, I mean, man, that snowball's growing in a hurry, and you can carry that for a while. And that's something we've seen with Mike Batesole over the years, that, you know, a double-digit win streak is not exactly rare. And I think this team this year has the depth to have that kind of potential.
You know, one of the things that I mentioned earlier in the week on my program, Paul, is, and I put it out on Twitter as well, is you look at the wrestling team, and they beat Oregon State, which is where Troy Steiner coached for about 10 years. And then number 11, Wyoming, comes in, and they beat him, and they beat him handily. You look at Natalie Benson. They've beaten two top 25 programs already. They've beaten Indiana. They've beaten Long Beach State. They were incredibly competitive playing against UCLA. My point is that the big wins against the name programs are no longer becoming the exception. They're starting to become the norm. Or at least, I shouldn't say starting to become, they are once again becoming the norm. We've seen that in football. We've seen the basketball team where they picked up a win up at Utah State. They picked the dominating win against Northwestern. In baseball, going back to last year, sure, they went 30-24, but you see Michigan State from the Big Ten come in here and they win four straight against them. And this all starts with great scheduling. All these coaches are putting together great schedules. They're not avoiding anybody, but their programs are beating a lot of these teams, and young recruits have got to look at this and say, I want to be a part of that.
Yeah, and that's what happens here. And this team, you know, is loaded with local recruits. I mean, I'm just walking in, and some of the current players are greeting the alumni golfers and the folks who are coming to play today. And, you know, most of them are from right around here. There's Zach Ashford, Zach Presno. They're both from Buchanan High School. You know, JT Arruda, who probably plays shortstop this year, Buchanan High School. And, you know, even beyond just the Fresno Clovis area, you get out into the valley. You know, you have Eddie Pena from Woodlake on this team. And really, it's, you know, it's a California team. It's a state school. So you've got Southern California, Northern California. With Fresno being right in the middle of the state, you can recruit those areas. Their parents can come for the weekend, be here for all three games, see it. So, yeah, you're in a great spot for recruiting. And I think, you know, this program has a lot to sell with the track record of championships, with the alumni base. And I'll say it again, I mean, Aaron Judge is a great selling point right now. If you say this is where Aaron Judge played and look at him now, who doesn't want to follow in those giant footsteps? And I think this is going to be a year that maybe the bandwagon fills up a little more. You talk about the RPI, we talked about that schedule. You know, the downside is there aren't quite as many home games, but I think that just means you better be there for the home games that they do have so you can get a taste of this team and not wait till, you know, they're making a wild run. Because the crazy thing in 08, everyone talks about it, national championship, that was so fun. None of those games were here.
Yeah.
You know, they were all away.
Right.
And nobody, by the time people figured out how special that team was, all the games were out of town and not that many people got to see them. So come see this team early, fall in love with them. Tremendous young men, so many of them Valley kids. Watch the way they play the game. Watch the way they compete. You know, another young man whose name I didn't mention is another local guy from Clovis High School, McCarthy Tatum, fifth-year senior. He's dealt with injury after injury, but he is so talented. And he's going to do a little pitching for this team this year. He's going to play some first base, probably DH a little bit, and I think hit the ton out of the ball. So that, you know, there are some guys here that have grown up in this community that have a lot to contribute this year, and the building blocks, the ingredients of a special team are right there. Now it's up to Coach Batesel and his staff to try to put those all in the right places and cook up something nice.
I just have to ask you as we close out this hour, this is a time of year for you. I know you don't like to normally make things about you, but I don't know how you do it. I mean, you've got basketball. We're right in the throes of the final push, you know, the last eight games. I think it's eight games in the Mountain West Conference season for the Bulldogs. You have baseball, you know, you have baseball starting up. How do you manage all of this?
You know, the person you should be asking that is my wife. She's the one who has the hard job because I am gone more, you know, in this month. But, you know, it's fun. It's exciting. It's calling games is fun. It's a privilege to have the red wave trust you to describe the action. You know, sometimes you say, well, how am I going to get from San Diego to Reno and back to do a baseball game, basketball game, baseball game? But that's a fun challenge to have.
Well,
it gets your adrenaline flowing.
Well, you have the Pacheco private jet, which is helpful. That's Pacheco Airways.
I think it's in the shop. But if it's healthy again, that will really come in handy.
Yeah, the wing is dented, so it's just...
But it, I mean, it's the time.
You do
like
a great
that.
Job. I'm just saying, you do a phenomenal job. You really do. I don't know anybody, and as I said, you're the last person that wants to bring attention to yourself, which is why I'm bringing attention to you. That your commitment to Fresno State athletics is impressive, Paul. It really is.
Well, that's why I'm giving the credit to my wife. She's the one who deserves it. Right, she works a lot harder than I do. And I'm looking forward to this next hour.
Should be good. And then our kids are in cheerleading competitions tomorrow.
Is that at Clovis West tomorrow?
Yes.
Yeah, they'll both be there.
Wow.
You'll have to take some pictures for me.
Oh,
I'll be at UNLV.
Oh, I'll take care of that. All right. Be one more hour. That's going to be led by Paul Leffler. He is the man covering this baseball team. And, one more hour to go here on 940 ESPN, Christopher Gabriel program, which is ending now, but Paul Leffler's taking over. This is the CGP.